heroes for.
The Show Haunted Outcast is Soapcast. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, IDW. What the shell, man? As tonight, we're going to be discussing everything that's been going on with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics up until the supposed death of Donatello. The internet has already given away all the detailed plot spoilers, but we're still going to be serving up not only some pizza, but some salty language. So listener discretion is advised.
How about pork rind and chili cheese fry?
Yeah, not so good names.
How about sprinkles and hot sauce?
Yet.
The royal weenies?
Yum!
Then how about, Bebop and Rocksteady?
Is that what you do? Randomly name enemies based on stuff you see around you?
Welcome to another episode of Haunted Outcast. March Madness 2015. Haunted Outcast here. I never questioned it ever. Albert was supposed to join, and is technically part of this podcast. Unfortunately, there were some technical issues while editing. While Albert was recording the podcast with me the night before, sadly, there was a lot of background noise with his family calling him to do some work, and a ton of background noise that I tried my best to edit out. And unfortunately, it was a little bit hard. Now, there are going to be two versions of this podcast I'm going to be uploading to try and put Albert in, or put in a separate one that I did with Albert in it. It's very long and complicated, but bottom line is, I think from now on, he's just going to have to wear the headphones with the microphone, because been a couple of times I tried to do a podcast with him, and you know, a lot of things are going on at the same time, and definitely need to try to drown out that that background noise, and you know, people calling for him to do stuff. So I'm going to inform him the next time, because I think it's just going to be, you know, a lot easier. So you're going to get two versions of this podcast, and what it pretty much is a Soapcast, as you probably heard on the interweb all week. Issue 44 of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the IDW comics, issue number 44. Donatello may have been killed in battle by Rocksteady, of all people, or mutants in this case, by a sledgehammer to the shell. Now, characters dying in comic books is nothing new. Characters have died in comic books for years and years, usually to sell the comic. But in this case, it was disturbing, and it was written, of course, by Kevin Eastman, who, as I'm sure fans are familiar, was the original creator, or one of the original creators, along with Peter Laird, for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, from what I understand, Eastman and Laird have not spoken in many, many years. But in 2012, when the comic book came back and Eastman's on board, and the 2012 cartoon, I guess he has more control. I guess Laird must have, sold the rights or whatever the case may be. But I'm glad at least we have one of the creators in control for the comics. And you can tell from both the artwork and the writing, this is probably the most solid reboot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in any media that I have been impressed. It's definitely one that I cannot put down. Now, for those of you who can't afford the comics, or it's hard to get to your local comic book store, I recommend two apps. Comixology. I know people have like a love-hate relationship towards it, but you could use that app, the IDW app as well. And there's also a site called Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D, where it's kind of like Netflix for books and comics. It's $8 a month, and you can read as many comics as you want. You don't have to return them or anything. They are downloaded, through streaming, but if you want to download them physically, you could have that option as well. And I think you can download them in a CBZ or a PDF format. So there are options, and that's how I got the Ultimate Mirage Collections and the trades for TMNT, and, you know, since then I've also been purchasing, you know, issues 38 onward, because it's not in volume 10 yet for the trade, I believe, and issue 44 was one that I could not put down. But before I get into the issue, I figured I'd do a quick history lesson for those of you who are not steady enough to live under, you know, or have lived under a rock, ba-bum-bum, or have not gotten your bebopped on, or whatever the case may be. The idea of the podcast was to discuss three of, you know, the most talked about villains, which are Bebop, Rocksteady, and Krang. Shredder, I think, has been talked about a lot, but I don't know if there's ever been, like, a solid podcast just for these three characters. I mean, they have been talked about a lot because of the 87 cartoon, the kid-tested, mother-approved cartoon. Mainly because the Mirage comics came out in the early 80s, which I believe was about 83, 84. And then once it was sold and to make into a cartoon from Playmates, Playmates wanted Bebop and Rocksteady in the animated show because it was to sell toys. So I guess Playmates just told Eastman and Laird, okay, we want this and we want this and we want that, and what's more deadlier than a warthog and a rhinoceros? So they were created, and Peter Laird apparently agreed with Playmates because he was also part of the negotiations, but I think David Wise and Fred Wolf, who of course invested more time into the animated show, you know, as I said, they wanted more and more. Who voiced? You could tell Cam Clark voiced Rocksteady. You could tell by the voice between the Leonardo voice and the sometimes Greg Berg voiced Bebop, and then sometimes Keith Tuttle would voice Rocksteady. Now, for those of you, a rhinoceros and a warthog, why a rhinoceros and a warthog? Like I said, well, they're dangerous animals. I'm not gonna, you know, you can go on Wikipedia and, you know, go over the stats for a rhinoceros and a warthog. I think, you know, that's pretty simple. But Rocksteady and Bebop, not only are they dangerous because they're a rhinoceros and a warthog, they're dangerous because they also carry lasers. They were not the greatest characters in a way because, unfortunately, they were like the Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam of the 80s cartoon universe. Again, because it was a kid-tested, mother-approved comic. But then sometime in 2003, because they were the 2003 series, even though it did have something to do with Mirage, they kind of sort of came back in a sense where Rocksteady's name was now Genji as he came from an alternate universe, and Bebop, you know, they did have a warthog, but again, came from an alternate dimension, so it was the closest thing you were going to see to Bebop and Rocksteady. They were supposed to show up in the second Teenage Ninja Turtles movie, The Secret of the Ooze, but unfortunately, due to a lot of legal issues, and I think Eastman and Laird did not want Bebop and Rocksteady in the second movie, we got Tokar and Rezar, a wolf and a snapping turtle. And the only other thing I can say about that is that they made an appearance in the Turtles in Time video game, as well as the Tournament Fighters game, I believe, and they had a small appearance in Season 8 or 9 of the 87 cartoon, and they were aliens from outer space, and the less we talk about Toka and Rezar, the better. Because they're not, you know, interesting characters. Even for Jim Henson puppet creations. Krang, well, what can I say about Krang? He's a brain creature. He comes from Dimension X. However, in the Mirage comics, there were these brain creatures known as Ultrons. And what happened was, they were from outer space, and the best thing to describe it, I guess, the 2003 cartoon would make a little bit more sense than the Mirage Comics, but they're brain creatures from outer space. Their ship crash-landed on Earth, and because it was going to take so long for them to repair the ship, and they apparently can live for a very long time, they build robots, and they live in the robots' stomachs to control them, and they made the robots look like humans. So, I guess when they moved on to the 87 cartoon, Fred Wolf and David Wise said, okay, fine, I got an idea. We'll just take one of the creatures, and we'll have him come from a dimension, Dimension X, and we'll call it Krang. And so the robotic suit that you see in the brain creature is an Ultron from the TMNT Mirage series. For the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the micro series villain comic book series that had 8 issues, and issue number 1, of course, dealt with Krang, and I have to say it was an interesting issue. It does have Jonathan Williamson, who wrote the issue, and Joshua Williams is known for Adventure Time, and he's known for some other indie comic books, but he wrote the issue, and the artist was Mike Henderson and Tyler Wapple, who also had done some independent comics in the dark, Masters of the Universe, Smuggling Nailbiter, apparently a lot of Image stuff. And anyway, the issue is pretty cut and dry, that Krang is almost a Jabba the Hutt-esque character. He's a spoiled prince on Dimension X, and after a hostile takeover, he is banished from the dimension, but he's able to fight off lizard creatures and snake creatures, and he's able to use his tendrils to wrangle a lizard, and he comes across a robotic creature where he not only finds a way to defeat it, but he puts his brain inside the creature's stomach, and now it's a robotic stomach, and that's how Krang is operating in this character's stomach. Best way to describe Krang. Very cut and dry, only like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 pages. And the same thing with the Bebop and Rocksteady, which is issue number 7 of the micro series IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles villain series. And this is written by Ben Bates and Dustin Weaver, who write the, as I said, Rocksteady and Bebop. Ben Bates has apparently written My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, wow, a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog issues, Teen Titans Go, and yeah, pretty much Sonic and Teen Titans Go and My Little Pony, wow. And we have Dustin Weaver, who has written Astonishing X-Men Infinity, S.H.I.E.L.D., the original Star Wars for Image, I mean from Dark Horse. And the artwork is done, of course, by Ben Bates as well, and once again, Tyler Wapoli. The cover for the Bebop and Rocksteady is awesome, as they come crashing through a wall, and Bebop and Rocksteady look more animal-like than they do, you know, in their 87 counterpart. Pretty much the way the characters look is from the 87 cartoon. You know, a black guy with a purple mohawk, and, you know, Rocksteady, you know, the overweight blonde-haired guy. Pretty much they've been beaten up by every gang, and no gang will take them, and they're living in an abandoned building. And apparently Rocksteady finds out through a friend of a friend of a friend that Karai and the Foot Clan is looking for humans to be part of a mutant project. So Rocksteady and Bebop partake in this fight club, and they beat all their opponents, looks like to death. And we can just see a shirtless Bebop and Rocksteady standing victorious while their victims have fallen, and there's a lot of blood dripping down from their palms and their chest. So they win the tournament, and they pick which animals they want to be mutated into. And Rocksteady picks the rhinoceros, and Bebop picks the warthog, and you know, then we see them emerge, and they're Bebop and Rocksteady, and they pretty much look like their 87 counterpart in a way, but they're, you know, puffed up a little more, you know, more muscular, a lot more deadlier, a lot more hairier, and especially with Bebop, and it's awesome. But Karai informs them that they're just going to be, you know, bodyguards for now for Karai as she tries to talk to rival gangs. And they're still kind of like the Lauren Hardy, not so much, but like maybe a small percentage of the 87, you know, Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Samness. The problem is because they're mutated, they don't realize their own strength. So while Bebop and Rocksteady are guarding Karai while Karai is trying to negotiate with another gang, Bebop and Rocksteady decide that they're going to have some fun. They walk over to a guard for another gang, and they go like, oh, there's something on your shirt, and they want to do, like, you know, the flick your nose, like that type of gig. But again, Bebop does not realize his own strength, and he accidentally breaks the rival gang's bodyguard's nose. And we see, like, a whack, and there's blood coming out of the nose, and the whack is in blood. So they take this as a sign of attack. So Bebop and Rocksteady get scared, and they're trying to fight their way out, and they're running through walls, and they're crashing through walls, and the rival gang's hideout collapses. And then we see a great panel of Bebop and Rocksteady, probably really, like, in the shadows in a way. Like, Bebop's back is turned to the audience in one panel, and his head is turned a touch, but we can see, and we can see Rocksteady, like, he has his grin, and he's in the shadows, and he's just really, really intimidating. And they think that Karai is dead, so they say, okay, well, Karai died, and we'll just lie to Shredder that his, you know, adopted daughter has passed away. And Karai comes out of the shadows, and Bebop and Rocksteady fight off as many Foot Clan members as they can, but when Karai goes to attack Rocksteady, and she pretty much puts her sword in his mouth and is about to kill him, they beg for their lives and they want a second chance. So Karai goes, wow, you know, you still want a second chance? Okay, fine, no problem. You can still be part of the Foot Clan. And they kind of go back to their own hideout, and they notice there's like a hole in the wall that they've been wanting to fix for a while, and they accidentally punch it, and the abandoned building that they live in has collapsed, and they're just laughing it off. And that's the Bebop and Rocksteady Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro-series villains, issue number 7. And I have to say, for both issues, for Krang, which is issue number 1 of the villain micro-series, and Bebop and Rocksteady, which is issue number 7, they're solid issues. They're well-written, they're well-drawn, and for 24 pages, they're each, so it's close to like 48-50 pages. They're smart, straight to the point, probably better origins than I saw in the 87 cartoon. I love what IDW has done with this series. So for both of them, I would go into more detail for those issues, but you could also check out GeekCastRadio.com's The Pull Bag, where Joe Reed, I believe, and of course TFG1 Mike, did review the villain micro series. So if you want a more full in depth, you could go ahead and listen to that one. I'm going to take a quick break, and when I come back, I'm going to discuss probably the most screwed up thing they've done so far this week with Donatello. Be right back.
Enemy fighter rockets off the port bow. Ooh, ooh, firing phaser beams.
What are you two imbeciles doing?
Huh? Oh, we're playing space pilot.
Yeah, and the Zarkonians are winning.
Play that my new body.
Ah, but I have.
Excellent. I want you to add to it this molecular amplification unit.
but why?
Saki, you fool! Don't waste time! Your forces are depleted! The turtles are on their way! Install the chip now!
Hey, Geekcast listeners! Do you ever listen to Punisher Body Count and think to yourself, this show would be awesome if it had less toilet humor and was not about the Punisher? If so, join me, Emily Williams, as I class up the Punisher guys on Dane and Jake Get Classy. We're like the Oprah Book Club of comics. You'll hear us discuss famous works like The Dark Knight Returns and The Grove, along with graphic novels no one else is talking about, like Blue Monday and Blankets. You can find us at daneandjakegetclassy.wordpress.com or on iTunes.
Pixels in the Animation is the Geekcast Radio Network's video game cartoon review show. We are covering every episode of 9 different video game cartoons. Join TV's Mr. Neil and myself, TFG and Mike, as we trek through multiple Mario tunes, Zelda, Captain N, Mega Man, Sonic, and we are also driving through Donkey Kong Country. Pixels in the Animation is 100 episodes of video game cartoon goodness, so tune in to help us find the Pixels in the Animation, which you can find every Wednesday on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com.
Say, Jarvis, is it that time?
The house party protocol, sir?
Correct.
The Pull Bag is GCRN's comic book review and discussion-based podcast. Join me, your host, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we make our way through the comics we are reading. Inside the Pull Bag, you'll also find back-issue classics and origins episodes of how we got into comic reading. You can find the Pull Bag every Wednesday on iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics and jump into the Pull Bag today.
Jarvis. Hey.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Now let's move on to the most talked about best worst secret on the internet this week. On the interweb, as you've heard, Donatello has been taken out by Rocksteady in issue number 44 of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, written by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz, and artwork by Corey Smith and Kevin Eastman. And I want to go into a very brief history, because I'm not going to talk too much more about the Mirage Comics. I will at one point, not tonight, a different podcast for a different time on the Mirage Comics. But I will say this much. When Eastman and Laird wrote and designed the original comics, it was black and white. I guess because of budgetary issues, not to mention the fact, you know, it was an independent comic. And I guess it would save money on making it color. But when they wrote the origin story for Shredder and Splinter, because the Mirage origin was Hamada Yoshi and Oroku Saki were in love with the same woman, and woman picked Yoshi. And what happened was Saki beat that woman, I think her name was Tenshin, and Hamada Yoshi was upset and beat that character, not Oroku Saki, I'm sorry, Oroku Saki's half-brother. It gets a little confusing in the Mirage comic. It's actually Oroku Saki's half-brother. And Hamada Yoshi beats that character with an inch of his life, and, you know, guy dies. And you don't really see the violence, you just see a lot of stuff, you know, off-panel in a way, but you kind of see, like, the fist every now and then coming in and out of the panel. No dialogue, and then you just see Yoshi looking at his bloody fist. So he takes Tenshin and his pet rat and goes to America and gets a job working in, Manhattan. Now, Oroku Saki, which I think is a kid in the Mirage comics, is at the funeral and will avenge his brother's half-brother's death. I believe it's the half-brother. It's been a while since I read the Mirage comic, but Saki does come to America, kills Yoshi and Tenshin, and the rat, of course, seeks revenge and, you know, mutates into Splinter. But in the Mirage comic, Splinter is a lot more angry than he has been in any other version of TMNT. He somehow comes across the four turtles, they mutate, And he's just training them the age of ninjutsu because he wants the turtles to kill Shredder, which they kind of do. And as I said, the Mirage comic is different from any type of medium, but for the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and the 2003 cartoon series, does his best to try to, you know, adapt what we, you know, what you would have read if you got your hands back then on the Mirage comic. Now, of course, it's been reprinted thanks to IDW, and there are several ways to get your hands on it. You can either buy the trades, or you could digitally download them, or you could go to Scribd and, you know, rent them or download them, whatever the case you want, you know. But it's not like a character's died in a comic before. And the rooftop sequence in the first Turtles movie is a little bit based on the comic, but it's much bloodier in the comic. In the comic, the four Turtles take out Shredder, and they actually have to use one of Shredder's grenades to kill him. Of course, in the movie, Splinter takes out Shredder, so it's one half dozen of the other. But it's, you know, you get the idea. And then, of course, in the 2003 cartoon, Splinter comes in and, you know, uses a water tower that's on the roof to try to take out Shredder. So that's pretty much it. Also, we find out that Shredder turns out to be an Ultron that's in, you know, that's in a robotic Shredder. But again, that's the 2003 cartoon. I'm sure it's also the Mirage comic, and I don't want to trail off too much. It's just, you know, I'll talk about that, you know, medium at another time. But for issue 44, what my point was is that what's great about Eastman, and I guess if Laird was still involved, they know how to use the violence and not shove it in our faces. Like, in any other comic, we would see the violence up close and personal. What I like about the violence here is we're seeing characters getting beaten up or whatever the case may be, but we're kind of seeing more of the aftermath. Like, if you got into a fight in REL life, you really wouldn't pay attention because you wouldn't be concentrating too much in a regular fist fight. If you know, you just wouldn't be thinking clearly. Your temper would get the best of you. So that's pretty much what they do in these panels of, you know, the IDW comics. And you're seeing not a regular slugfest, but you're kind of seeing the opening bits and pieces of the middle of fists flying and characters getting knocked around. And then when you see the final blow, you're only seeing bits and pieces of it, and you, the reader, have to use your imagination to find out what's happening next. And it deals with a character known as Metalhead that is a robotic turtle. He's yellow and green and gray. For the 87 series and the Turtles in Time video game, I know of Metalhead. And I think he's also in the arcade game, too. I know of Metalhead. It's just pretty much a robotic turtle that can shoot out missiles and has extended arms, and that's pretty much it. In the 87 cartoon, I think Donatello invented Metalhead, but with all four turtles' personalities, and the problem was that the robot was confused of who was good and who was evil, and he couldn't tell if Rocksteady, Bebop, and Shredder were good and the turtles were evil. He got so confused that he just decided to attack everybody. And it just, you know, other than an interesting figure and interesting design, Metalhead hasn't been shown too much. He's a great boss fight in the Turtles arcade game in Turtles 1 and 2, but that's pretty much it. He does make an appearance again in the series. I guess he makes a little bit more sense now, but the fight between Donatello and Rocksteady and Bebop is probably the bloodiest Rocksteady Bebop turtle fight I've seen. It's probably the fight we've always wanted to see, and I'm sure in the 21st century we're going to get that fight, hopefully in the second Turtles movie. And apparently, since issues I think 37 onward, because we're up to issue 44, of course, has the bonding between Shredder and Krang. And Krang has built a Technodrome, which the best way to describe it, the Technodrome is the star on wheels with a gigantic eye on the top. And Krang wants to terraform Earth into Dimension X. And apparently for issue 44, Donatello and Metalhead are at a base to make sure that they could stop Krang, because Donatello, of course, is the brains. What happens is that Krang has informed Rocksteady and Bebop to kill Donatello, you know, to make sure that his plans do not fail. So, of course, Bebop and Rocksteady are able to take out Donatello because it's not, you know, the 87 cartoon. You know, it's not like Batman 66. It's a very bloody fight. It's hard to describe the fight. A lot goes on, as I said. Fists are flying. We see panels where they're just blood red, meaning they're bleeding. I mean, Rocksteady is smashing Donnie. And Donnie is really more of the brains anyway. He's not too much of a battler. But Metalhead tries to join in, and Rocksteady just picks up Metalhead with, like, one hand and rips off Metalhead's arm. Which is, even for, you know, a robot battle, to rip off the arm is pretty bloody, in a way, if you think about it. And just tosses Metalhead like a, you know, an 80s die-cast toy. And then Bebop kind of elbows Donatello in the back of his shell, and Rocksteady picks up a sledgehammer, lifts it, and cracks it over Donatello's shell, and we just hear and see this gigantic crack, K-R-A-K. Panel's all bloody, we can see the force of the sledgehammer coming down, and we just see, like, a panel of a split of Metalhead and the scientist controlling Metalhead going, oh no, and that's it, pretty much Donnie is dead. And Bebop says something like, whoa, you split him in half, man, gross, yeah, didn't expect to look like that under there either. And we can see Rocksteady holding up the bloody sledgehammer with blood dripping from the sledgehammer. A lot of other stuff is going on in this comic, as the three other turtles and Splinter are trying to fight off Krang and defeat, you know, the minions of the Technodrome. Professor Honeycutt, the Fugitoid, has an appearance. It, you know, we have Krang. Pretty much, this issue does not quit. And there's a lot that happens in this issue, which I would talk about, but my main focus is the whole Donatello getting, you know, whacked and cracked. But the final panel is Raphael, you know, holding his fist, clenching his fist, bulging as always. Mikey just holding on to Leonardo, crying. Leonardo don't not know what to do. Donnie's pretty much dead on the floor. His blood is coming from his shell. And Splinter on his knees holding Donnie's head, saying, my poor brave son. And Metalhead standing behind Splinter without his, you know, an arm that's been ripped off. And nobody really knows what they want to do next. Now, there has been all these panels that have been leaked onto the interweb. I think for issue 50 or 55, where Donatello is in a bed, hooked up to a life support system. There are many rumors. He'll either merge with Metalhead, he'll become a cyborg, or, you know, Metalhead will, you know, have the personalities of Donatello, and he'll, you know, the mind of Donatello will go inside Metalhead. Or, you know, it's kind of curious what's going to happen next. The thing is that Donnie is the brains. I mean, you know, I always thought of him as the plot device, but in the video game I used him because he had the staff bow and he had a long-range weapon. My favorite turtle, I have to say, is Mikey. But now, with the 2003 series onward, it's Raph, Mikey, Donnie, and Leo. Leo doesn't seem to be a lot of people's favorite character, mainly because he seems to be, or wanting to be, the good son. And he claims he's the turtle's leader, and yet, you know, sorry, Crime Time. I know you think Raph is the leader, but and that song Turtle Power, but it's Leonardo. Guess you didn't read the comic after all, Crime Time. but or Partners in Crime, I'm sorry. See, I didn't even do my research. Partners in Crime, who sang the song Turtle Power, they think Raphael is the leader. No, it is Leonardo. But anyway, the point being is that in the 2003 series, it got a lot more real and their lives are more on the line than the 87 cartoon. And, you know, in the 87 cartoon, Leonardo would say, "We'll get you next time, Shredder, next time." But in the 2003 cartoon, Leonardo would say things like, you know, "This isn't a game. It's like we're taking two steps forward, two steps back." Leonardo in the 2003 cartoon was more of like, you know, not only the good son, but he had to be the straight A-plus student. If he got an A-minus on a test, he'd go nuts. There is a great story in the fourth season where Leo feels that he's not being trained hard enough, and he accidentally attacks Splinter, and Splinter has to meditate for a day and sends Leo somewhere to Japan where he could be trained more by the master who trained Amato Yoshi. And I think it's close to episode 100 in the 2003 series, if the 2003 series, you know, ever gets to be put on, you know, disc legally by some Nickelodeon, please. Michelangelo, you know, he is the free spirit, but he's also the sensitive one. He's going to take this, you know, the hardest, and Raphael has always been the angry one. He's a stereotypical angry teenager. So, I'm sure, and you know, Splinter is, you know, the father. Now, of course, as I said, in the Mirage comics, Splinter did pass away, I believe, where he had a stroke or something where I had a bad experience. But you always expect, like, when is Splinter going to die? I even thought in the 2014 movie he was going to die. Even, or Casey Jones or April, but Donnie, I don't know, to take out one of the turtles is kind of, bottom line is, it's an excuse to sell comics. Because I believe a variant issue right now is selling for $100, and that's what bothers me the most. As Raphael would say. Damn! But I will say this. For the IDW series, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I love the origin story, which, out of all the origin stories, I think this one is the smartest with Oroko Saki and Hamato Yoshi. I like the idea that they were around since ancient Japan, and Yoshi had a wife, and he had four sons that had four different geese, you know, purple, red, yellow, and blue. And apparently Saki, it's been a while since I read issue 1 of the IDW comic. I actually think it's in issue 4 or 5. But the point being is that it's been a while since I read the early issues, but I believe Saki killed Amato Yoshi's wife. Yoshi wanted revenge. He was ambushed when trying to kill Oroko Saki, and Saki killed the four sons, which of course were the red, yellow, purple, and blue geese, and then killed Yoshi. And, you know, we find out many years later, I guess in 2012, that they've been reincarnated into turtles and a rat, and eventually they're mutated as part of a project and they become the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is a lot better than the 2014 movie. There's a lot more to it, as I said, but I like the reincarnation aspect more than anything else and any other origin of the series. I don't know what's going to happen to Donatello, if he's either A, going to be reincarnated into Metalhead, or become a cyborg. I don't know where they're going with all this, but I will say this much. I like what IDW has done with the series, and I wish, out of all the variations that I've seen on TV and in the movies, the 2003 cartoon series is the best. The 1990 movie is the best. The movie Turtles Forever is the best. And as for comics, IDW is the best. And video games has to be the original arcade game. You know, the not the Nintendo version. If you can get your hands, if you did like me, you know, the arcade version, which you can get on, if you have one of the PS2 games or the GameCube games, you can unlock it, as well as Turtles in Time that you could get from PlayStation or Xbox before they discontinued it. Those are the best. And I'm hoping one day we get another great Turtles game, you know, down the road, and another, hopefully, kick-ass Turtles movie, but the 2014 version and the 2016 version, as long as Michael Bay is behind it, is going to be horseshit, or, you know, Turtle Guano, or Turtle Soup. But as for the Micro series villains, you know, please pick up the rest of them. You know, Baxter and, you know, Han from the Purple Dragons, they're all great. And please continue to read the IDW TMNT. And I've said, you know, a million times you can get them. And as well, subscribe to GeekCastRadio.com's main feed shows, you know, the main GeekCast Radio show, Masters of the Universe, the Pull Bag, which I guest on every now and then, and of course all the syndicated shows, Dan and Jake at Classy, Turtle Flakes, which is a syndicated show, and they did also discuss recently, for 10 minutes, Rob and Josh discussed their thoughts and opinions on what's going on with Donatello and what they think is going to happen. So please check out that episode and that podcast, Turtle Flakes. Please check out Dan and Jake at Classy, Doctor Whoiverse, Mirrored Ink Podcast, and many, many more. And as for all the other non-Geekcast Radio podcasts I've subscribed to, please check them out, each and every one. There, of course, is the Arkham Sessions, Batman the Animated Series Podcast, Continuous Play Podcast, Books and Nachos, Digital Drift, Forgotten Flicks, Kaiju Cast, Real Ghost Stories Online, Two Dudes in the NES, Disney Film Project Podcast, and of course Now Playing Podcast. And congratulations on Now Playing Podcast for reaching their goal to get the funds they needed. They will be working hard on the book now on 100 underrated movies. And for those of you who pledge like me through Kickstarter, I'm getting some nice little digital goodies that I will be listening to. And, of course, I also got a reward slot to pick a movie that's going to be written in their book. And I've decided to pick probably one of the most underrated 80s films ever. And I will be discussing said movie once Hunnic Outcast reaches its 1,000th download. We are 65 downloads away, and when that happens, oh, it's going to be a swinging party, if you know what I mean. But we'll get there when we get there. In the meantime, please feel free to leave any feedback at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com. And you can find us at Facebook, facebook.com/hunnickoutcast, and the group Facebook, Hunnick Outcast, Twitter, Hunnick Outcast. Facebook, it's plural. The Twitter, it is not. And also, I know there are two different feeds. The old one, where it's the Mad Hatter Zombie, that's the pod bean. Please, you know, disregard that. The newest one is by the Rene Bautista artwork, the Harley Quinn one. And, of course, Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, all one word, not plural, Hunnic Outcast. That's it for now. Until next time, Donatello, wherever you are, I raise this slice of pizza for you.
Are you looking for a weekly dose of gaming news and retro? Then check out Off the Cuff, available Fridays on Geekcast Radio Network from the producers of XRG. New name, same.
Emergency. Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman. It's really exciting.
Greetings, citizens. Join me, your old bat chum, John S. Drew, on my journey to discover what it is I love about the classic 1966 Batman television series on the Batcave podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by a guest host as we review the classic television series. There's a new episode every 2 weeks. Same bat time, same Bat Channel on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at thebatcavepodcast.com.
Holy memoranda, folks! Make a note not to miss it.
Good thinking, Robin.
You stay here and keep April safe. We'll go after Shredder.
Man, Shredder and stuff. Craziness.
Yeah.
Hey, question. Is there a full banana peel melting into my head right now?
Yes.
That is unfortunate. What the? Who did that, man? That was probably Krang or something.
Krang was never here. It's just us.
Nah, that was probably Krang, I bet. So nasty. That guy, man.
That's impossible. I would have seen him.
Nah, man. Nah, he was here. He blew ass and then he left.
Muckman, I know you're lying.
Freaking Krang, man.
There is no way Krang came in, farted for 10 whole seconds, and then left. I absolutely would have seen that occur. Look, I don't care. You had gas. It happens. Just please don't blatantly lie to my face.
Cool, man. No, cool. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Cool. We are cool. Krang, man.
It was not Krang!